Hey guys, welcome back to Yolitics. We're talking about one of the prettiest places in this state.
Have you been there?
Not Wheeler's backyard.
It's definitely
he
not.
He wishes that was one of the prettiest places.
I wish that was backyard.
I have been there. I've only been there one time, and wow, it's awesome. We're talking about Big Bend National Park, just the entire Big Bend region.
Yeah.
But the national park itself, I mean, really is a jewel. That if people haven't been out there, you don't know what you're missing. This is unlike any other part of the state.
It is. It's a very special part of Texas. If you've driven all over Texas, flown all over Texas, you know that when you step into Big Bend, something different happens. And especially if you get down to places like Santa Elena Canyon, it is a magical place. I'm sorry, my phone's going off here.
Come on, man.
I got to make that thing be quiet.
Is that Mrs.? That's your daughter.
That's one of my daughters. Uh-oh. Don't they know what I do for a living?
You're in trouble, man.
So where were we?
But Santa Elena Canyon, that's the picturesque, Instagram-worthy canyon. I have not been there.
It's an amazing place.
Where the Rio Grande cuts right through, and one side's Texas, one side's Mexico, and it's just gorgeous there. Lajitas, you have the golf course down there. You have just this beautiful, untouched, rugged terrain.
Beautiful by day when you go to see it, and at night, pitch black. I mean, you see nothing but the stars, and you can see the dust of the galaxy over the
Milky Way. Yeah,
it's an amazing place in a lot of ways. You've probably been seeing Big Bend popping up in your social feeds all week long because there's change underway there. The Trump administration has moved in there and is moving in some heavy equipment and has been doing some bulldozing work and some road work out that way. And this is the beginning.
Wait, bulldozing Big Bend?
Bulldozing Big Bend.
What?
That's the title of this podcast.
So why are they doing this?
Well, they're doing this in the name of border security in a place where critics of this will say, you don't need to add security to Big Bend National Park because there's not a lot of people braving that.
And not even critics say that. The federal government's own data for the Big Bend sector, that huge stretch of Texas, they have, 100 or 200 people a year try to cross this very dangerous area. People just don't go there. Yeah, people don't go there because there's nothing there. There's no cities on the Mexican side, and you have to go a long way before you get to cities on the Texas side.
So the politics,
so no one goes there.
And the politics of this are interesting because a lot of times we see this set up along the familiar lines when we have an issue that divides people. This one is different than that. This is looking a lot more bipartisan, some would call it nonpartisan, because we've seen people coming out from both parties, including some Texas House lawmakers, a bipartisan group of them, who late this week called on Governor Abbott in a letter to him to urge him to create a cease and desist on what you're doing there at Big Bend. Stop the work that's going forward and let's sit and think about this and talk about this. To our knowledge, Governor Abbott hasn't made any public statements condemning what he's seeing there or saying that he's going to do something to stop it or slow it. We reached out to him as well. We haven't heard back yet. We also reached out to Senator Ted Cruz. Haven't heard back yet. And we reached out to the Paxton campaign. Of course, he's running for Senate. He did say that he's strong on border security, but at the same time that he prefers that we take into consideration the unique characteristics of the Big Bend area. So not like a strong statement against what's happening there, but just saying that his opponent, the Democrat James Tallarico, has called this a monument to corruption that no Texan asked for. So he's come out very much against this. And of course, John Cornyn, the man that they're trying to replace, Senator John Cornyn, came out strong this week as well and asked
the land commissioner too, Dawn Buckingham.
She
came out against it. So like you said, it's bipartisan. Republicans and Democrats don't want it, which is striking to me. Okay, well, if you have Republicans and Democrats that don't want it, why is it happening? Why isn't someone on the phone with the White House saying, whoa, slow your roll here. This is a part of the state we don't want to touch.
And yet it's being touched. And so we decided to get someone on the line here to kind of cut through it all and tell us, first of all, we needed somebody who's really familiar with Big Bend. We've been there, a handful of times, but we needed somebody who has really spent sort of a lifetime there. And we found the perfect guy who can tell us, what's at stake here, what the possibilities are as far as threats go of doing this work there and what it's like there from an illegal crossing standpoint and what he sees as some political vulnerabilities if you are in public office here in Texas and you don't take some kind of a tough stand on this. He thinks that could be a political vulnerability for some folks.
This could cost somebody an election.
Yeah. That's really? What, I don't know if he's saying it could cost them the election. He is saying that this is something that could make you stand out, perhaps not in a good way with a lot of Texans.
If you're okay tearing up this part of Big Ben. And to be clear, you know, they're not bulldozing everything, but they are having to put, you know, man camps in, the labor, in order to put these giant vehicle barriers in there. Yeah. There's no wall that's physically going to go into this part, I believe. They got rid of the wall.
Right.
But still they have vehicle barriers, these big, you know, pylons,
bollards
or whatever, that come out of the ground, which, again, there's really no one driving across this part, too.
Yeah,
but they're still tearing up the terrain, sensors
being put
like
in, lines being buried potentially, and a lot of road construction, which is a big concern out there as well, and the potential that we might see security lights added in the evenings in this that is one of the darkest places that you can find anywhere.
Ruining that night sky.
Correct. And so there's a lot of concern out there on a lot of different fronts. And so we got this guy on the phone, actually on computer.
We got him on the computer. Okay, Boomer.
Yeah, we got him on the computer. And his name is Bob Krummenacker. He is the most recent former superintendent of Big Bend National Park and very knowledgeable about what's going on out there. And he has a lot to say about this.
Let's go to computer.
So, Bob, thanks so much for being with us. Really appreciate you taking the time because I know that you are so much more familiar, I guess, with Big Bend Park than many Texans might be. Although, you know, I was talking with you offline about this. Boy, you get on social media right now, and if you know enough people here in Texas, you're seeing all kinds of things about Big Bend and what's going on there right now. There is a special love of that place here in Texas.
There certainly is, Jason. Big Bend National Park is a gift from Texans to the nation. That was part of the way it was described back in the 1930s when Texans bought the land and donated it to the federal government with the expectation that it would be permanently protected from harm. And this is something that Texans and most Americans that know about it are just horrified by.
What have you thought, before we get into, you know, what's actually happening there in the Big Bend region right now, what have you thought about the outpouring that you've been seeing from Texans? We saw a big protest at the Capitol last week. But you know, like I said, if you get online anywhere, A, you see articles popping up all over the place about this, and B, you find yourself anywhere on social media and a lot of people are just incensed about this. What have you thought about that response?
Well, it's been gratifying. It's too bad it takes the imminent destruction of a national park to bring people out. But I think people took it for granted. Those who knew Big Bend loved it, but they also assumed it would be permanently protected. So it's been really gratifying. It's been incredibly nonpartisan. It is all across the board. People are signing up to support Keep Big Bend Wild and other groups that are working on this. Everybody wants to know what they can do. And maybe we can talk about that, Jason, because it's a hard thing to figure out. How do you change something coming from Washington that seems to be politically driven, not based on local input, statewide input, or facts on the ground?
And of course, you're still very involved with Keep Big Bend Wild there, which is advocating for that entire area and protecting it. And of course, you were the superintendent there of Big Bend National Park for almost 5 years before retiring in 2023. Can you just walk us through the images that you've seen in the past, you know, week and a half or so, 2 weeks, of this heavy equipment being moved into that region and starting to do some clearing work? And of course, knowing what could be coming. And also, I would point out, not knowing what could be coming, because it seems like the plans, the details have changed several times, and it doesn't feel like anybody is totally clear on what's about to happen here.
We don't even know if Customs and Border Protection is clear on what's about to happen. A couple of people are using the term hide the ball. So what they have put out on their website may or may not be the plan. There's no details there. The map is not very accurate. And some of the things they are proposing are just almost physically impossible. But they have unlimited money. They don't seem to be paying much attention to facts on the ground, the need for this based on border security numbers or what people think. So we're not sure what will stop them. But what we've seen in the last week or so is, as you say, heavy equipment entering the park. There are man camps being built and equipment areas being staged just outside the park. There's surveying going on potentially for a man camp inside the park right now, although they have not, to my knowledge, broken ground on that. But the heavy equipment in the park is doing two things right now. One is fairly benign, which is grading some of the unpaved roads that the Park Service has not been able to keep up with because of staff cuts from this administration, as well as a lot of storm damage earlier in the year. That's fine. If they stop there, everybody's happy. But the bigger thing that's of greater concern is that bulldozers are clearing a new route for what appears to be a Border Patrol patrol road near Santa Elena Canyon, one of the most iconic, beautiful parts of the park. There's no history of any significant numbers of people illegally crossing the border over there. And this new road is going right through a riparian forest. It is critical habitat for a threatened bird, the yellow-billed cuckoo. They've, of course, waived the Endangered Species Act, so they don't have to pay any attention to that. But it's also within 100 yards of an existing paved road. And so what possibly is the benefit of this? So, you know, in addition to the huge environmental harm and the emotional impact this is having on people who care, we also want to point out this is an incredible waste of taxpayers' money. Border security is important. Keep Big Bend Wild, and most people in West Texas are very much supportive of sensible border security. But I've testified before Congress that it's already working at Big Bend, and more Border Patrol agents, more sensors that are wireless and can be moved from place to place, more high altitude drones if they wanted to use them. Nobody has any issue with that. But instead, they have a contract for $1.72 billion, which is about half, more than half of the entire budget of the entire National Park Service, not just Big Bend, the entire National Park Service across the country, including Yellowstone and Yosemite. It's just a scale that is inconceivable right now. And so they have probably cleared a few hundred yards right now of new road, and it's anywhere from the width of a bulldozer to about four or five widths of a bulldozer. And when questioned by some of your media colleagues, they've said, oh no, we haven't begun construction. And they've also said repeatedly, we are just in the initial stages of planning and design. That's a direct quote from them. If you're in the initial stages of planning and design, why do you have bulldozers out there?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have been, you know, seeing some of these videos. We've had limited imaging coming from that area of what has been happening. But I've seen this video several times of a javelina with apparently a little baby javelina running as this heavy equipment is, you know, moving through or being staged there. What are your thoughts about the effect on wildlife there? You mentioned one of the birds that, you know, could be affected by this. But we're talking about a pretty extraordinary array, aren't we, of wildlife as well as, you know, flora and fauna out there.
There are more nesting bird species in Big Bend National Park than almost any other national park in the country. And many of those nest along the river in the riparian habitat. So, you know, we don't know for sure that those birds will not come back after this construction. But we do know that one of the most destructive things they're planning is a road right north of Mariscal Canyon, one of the three deep canyons in the park. And that would cross the 1,700-foot plateau above the river. It's senseless. It would be slower than using the existing road, which goes around the mountain. It probably involves blasting. And that is the highest density of peregrine falcon nests anywhere in the state of Texas. Peregrine falcons are no longer on the endangered species list, but they are still very sensitive to noise and disturbance. And so we can expect that peregrine falcons will leave and perhaps never come back. Elsewhere in the park, where they may build a man camp closer to the eastern side of the park, they're probably going to drill wells. There's already water shortages in the park for the existing park uses and for wildlife. And another species, this one endangered, the Big Bend Gambusia fish, is highly dependent upon groundwater levels in that area, in ponds that the Park Service maintains. So we can probably kiss the Gambusia goodbye from the planet if they end up doing that.
You mentioned a road there at the top of that bluff and at the top of that canyon. Congressman Lloyd Doggett put out a statement and, about all of this, but spoke specifically about that. And I think it's germane to the conversation here only because he was saying that that would essentially be, you know, doing a development that, you know, if you were coming across the border from Mexico into the U.S. and you were trying to be undetected and sneak in, you would have to scale a 1,400-foot cliff in order to get to that area where there, you know, where that construction could be taking place there. Your position and the position of many of your former colleagues who have held that top role there at the Big Bend National Park is that this would have negligible impacts on any crossing activity that could be happening there, which, as you mentioned a moment ago, is much lower than what we see on just about any other part of the Texas-Mexico or the U.S.-Mexico border.
The Homeland Security waived the federal laws based on the premise that this area, the Big Bend sector, is an area of high illegal entry. The sector, which is much more than the park, it's 517 miles, is by far the lowest area of all the nine big border patrol sectors from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico.
And but yet it represents about a quarter of the border.
Right, right. But only about 6% of the crossings, or at least the apprehensions. The Big Bend National Park, which is 118 miles within that sector, is by far the lowest section of illegal border apprehensions of the entire U.S.-Mexican border. In fact, it's less than 0.05% in the last several years. And so it's an absurd amount of money for a massive amount of destruction for a very, very little bit of impact. And the key thing is nobody is against border security. As I said, the Border Patrol has a station in the park. They regularly patrol the existing park roads. The small number of people that do come across, it's more than zero, almost all of them give themselves up willingly along one of those existing roads. There's already hundreds of sensors in the park. They're wireless. They can be moved from place to place. They are jointly operated by the Border Patrol and the sheriffs in the local counties and the National Park Service. And if they want to augment that system with more or higher technology, provided it's as low impact as what's there, nobody has any issue with that. So this is essentially the one-size-fits-all strategy from Washington that we need to put in massive infrastructure. We need to make it permanent with wires between everything. They're proposing fiber optic cable connections, which, impact aside, how much longer is fiber optic going to be the technology? I mean, that's just insane when you think about it, when wireless technology works just fine and can be updated easily. They're talking about buried power cables in areas subject to severe flooding and landscape movement. And what they don't seem to understand is this is probably the most unreliable power grid in the state of Texas because it's the most remote and there's very few customers. So when I was there, we had power outages that were a day or two or three all the time. Hey, that's not going to work real well for their sensor system. So they're just not listening to any input. It's just horrific.
Let me ask you, so you were the park superintendent there for almost 5 years, as we mentioned at the outset here. In that time, I mean, you're talking about people who, you know, the very few, relatively speaking, who would come across the border and start making their way through the park would invariably give themselves up to Border Patrol there in the park. Because if you've ever been to Big Bend National Park and you've set out on a hike and you didn't take a fair amount of water with you, and even if you have a good sense of direction, you might find yourself in some real peril out there. And so a lot of them turn themselves over. And I say a lot of them, we're not talking about many people to begin with. In your 5 years there, could you spitball it for us? How many people are we talking about that you were aware of who had actually tried to make their way through the park?
In the most active year, which was right after COVID, there were about 700 people that were apprehended in the national park, a little less than 700. Every other year I was there, and I understand since I left, it's been anywhere from 10 or 20 to 200 at most. And in fact, Keep Big Bend Wild has had those numbers on our website for some time. And we've done a Freedom of Information Act request with the National Park Service so that we can get the numbers that they've shared informally with us officially on letterhead. And so we're about to post those ourselves. But the numbers are very, very small. Again, it's not zero. No one's suggesting it is. But in terms of the terrain, to build this massive infrastructure in these deep canyons makes no sense. No one crosses through the canyons. And we worked very closely with Mr. Doggett's staff to help him get the facts right on that. And we are very grateful to he and all the other congressional representatives who are coming out in defense of Big Bend. But, you know, one of the things that's challenging right now is this is a political podcast or TV show. We are nonpartisan. We will talk to people of any party, and we want to. Very, very few Republicans, although that's starting to break, are saying anything. You know, Ken Paxton has come out in favor of the wall, but that's probably because Tallarico said he's against it. But Don Buckingham, the state land commissioner, and John Cornyn just earlier today have come out with statements. But I think it's also important for the politicians to understand it's not just a wall. You know, it does look like at this point they're probably not going to build a 30-foot wall, and we're glad to see that, and we applaud them for that decision. But vehicle barriers where there's no chance of vehicles crossing, and hundreds of miles of patrol roads and cables and wells and man camps and blasting of mountains, it's still incredibly destructive for very little benefit and massive cost to the taxpayer.
And when you talk about the people who've come out, you know, to discuss this and have come out against this, we, as you mentioned, we've seen Democrats, we've seen Republicans criticizing this. We have also seen a lot of the area county judges and the sheriffs coming out against this. And you were joined by six former Big Bend National Park superintendents and a former deputy superintendent. And I think you all put it all together and y'all had 259 combined years of National Park Service experience. So quite a pedigree there. Y'all wrote this open letter to the Department of Homeland Secretary Mullen back in May of this year, urging him not to waive those federal laws and allow for these physical barriers and these roads and this border border security infrastructure to be built without first going through the environmental and cultural studies process and taking public involvement and hearing from the public about this. You all wrote that letter and included a lot in it that we'll get to here. Did you ever hear anything back?
Sadly, no. We did not get a response, at least from them. We've got a lot of response from other politicians in the public and the media. We wrote a second letter, Jason, as well, after he did waive the laws. That's also published on our website, keepbigbendwild.org. And we said, look, we regret that you've done that, but if you're going to do things in the work, please minimize the impact as your own CBP commissioner has said that he would. And then we had a whole list of things we said, here are things that we recommend you do, and here are things we please urge you not to do. And again, we've gotten no response from any of that.
So just crickets so far.
Crickets. Yeah. And I would also add that I and the other superintendents were responsible not just for Big Bend, but also the Rio Grande Wild and Scenic River downstream, which is also at high risk. So under my watch, there was 245 miles of the border. And while the National Park Service was not responsible for border security, as I said, we worked really closely with the Border Patrol. We were in contact with them all the time. They lived in our housing area. They were part of our community. And I probably had more responsibility for any section of the border than any other federal official did. Yeah. I testified before Congress alongside the sheriff of Terrell County last year as a retiree, saying border security is working in this area. Now, ironically, Sheriff Claveland and I were testifying on opposite sides of a bill, which was not specifically about the border barrier, but we are allies right now. I mean, he is highly opposed to these senseless vehicle barriers and the massive amount of overkill that is being proposed. So it's border security professionals, much more so, even so than National Park superintendents, who know what they're talking about are saying this is just all out of proportion.
In that letter that you all sent, one of the things that you talked about was how Big Bend National Park is one of this nation's crown jewels, as you called it. In the letter, and the group said that, you know, you're worried that that's going to be irrevocably damaged. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, how hard it is when you have a place that's this pristine, that's this wild, this untouched? If you have, you know, something come in and you have permanent installations like this, even down the road, let's say, if somebody else decides, hey, let's take that stuff back out of there, how much damage does that do?
Well, it all will depend on just how much damage they do in the first place, of course. But if they fulfill everything that they've got on their websites, there will be visual scars that will not go away. Now, maybe where they're building this road right now in a riparian forest, that probably could be restored. But if they're going to be blasting a new road over a 1,700-foot limestone mountain, you'll never see that come back. You can't restore that. If they are going to draw down the water table and destroy the habitat of threatened and endangered species, those animals will never come back because their habitat will be gone. You know, one of the big unknowns, because we've seen them talk out of both sides of their mouth, is lighting. You know, many border infrastructures have had stadium-type lighting that, you know, light up the night sky. The Greater Big Bend area, bigger than the national park alone, is part of something called the Greater Big Bend International Dark Sky Reserve. Now, there's no law and no teeth behind that, but that is a cooperative program with the U.S. and Mexico and most of the local counties and jurisdictions where everybody realizes that these are the darkest night skies in North America, and that is also a major impact on the tourism economy. Mm. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that once you knock them down, they don't come back. And you know, Keep Big Bend Wild was originally formed before the border infrastructure issue was really front and center. Our goal has been and remains the permanent legal protection of most of the undeveloped areas of the park as federal wilderness, which unfortunately doesn't stop a border wall unless there's something in that law that actually says that, and that's what we're aiming for, hopefully, in the next Congress. But the way that's designed, it's to keep the National Park Service essentially from building new roads or new lodges where they don't currently exist. And the lines would be drawn so that nothing that's able to be done by the public legally in the park right now would be impacted at all. So it would be the best way of assuring that our grandchildren would have as close to a pristine, wild Big Bend experience as they have now. The irony of all this, Jason, is that we have more support for that bill now than we have ever had because Big Bend is threatened in a way that no one ever perceived as possible. But, you know, depending on what they do, the boundaries obviously might have to change to, because once they build border barriers and roads, those are no longer qualified for wilderness.
So that's an interesting piece of news here, though, that, you know, we have this, and I guess this was, Big Bend was sort of nominated for this or designated for this a long time ago to be, you know, really classified with teeth, as you say, as this wilderness area, this, you know, do not touch. But it never actually happened. It never actually was approved into, you know, full law. And what you're saying here is that you all are now seeing more support for that and possibly more momentum for that because of the threat that this poses.
Yeah, you're spot on with one correction. It's not about making sure the land is untouched. It's about making sure the footprint of humans is minimal and not detectable. Ah. So trails and access and horseback riding, as I said, anything you can do in those areas between the roads now would still be perfectly legal and encouraged. It would just limit the footprint of additional pavement and additional buildings. So I think wilderness is often misunderstood. But the only reason that did not pass the Congress in 1978 when they first considered it is that was the same year that the hugely controversial proposal to establish the Rio Grande Wild and Scenic River downstream of the park was also being debated. And that was controversial because it was mostly private land, and Texas is, of course, very protective of private land rights. And I think there was a consensus of the politicians, the National Park Service, and the advocates for the park and the river that the river was more at risk and they were only going to get one. So they withdrew the bill for Big Bend Wilderness because it was not as essential at that time. But that same year, Guadalupe Mountains National Park saw a wilderness bill, and that's been very successful and very popular. So part of what Keep Big Bend Wild is doing and the National Park Service was doing when I was superintendent, was reminding people that we've already gone through this thinking and we just have to essentially close the deal that was already discussed and it's been out there for 40 or 50 years. The related part is pre-wall, pre-current administration, the Park Service had a policy, not just Big Bend, but the entire National Park Service had a policy that said once an area is identified to be eligible for federal wilderness, the park would manage it to protect those values, to preserve the prerogative of Congress to act. And the current administration is reviewing that policy as we speak right now. And so those protections that people have taken for granted are very likely to also disappear.
I wanted to ask you, because we touched on this with the Texas Land Commissioner, Don Buckingham. Obviously, you know, some of these lands down there, the state of Texas has an interest in them. It manages them or it has land down that way. And she was really put off that some of this preliminary work that's been going on down there appears to have touched some of that land that the state of Texas manages. And so she did a cease and desist on this. She, you know, it's there on the land commissioner's website with the title, "Don't Tread on Texas, Commissioner Buckingham Orders Federal Contractors to Cease Unauthorized Activity on State Land." Again, that is probably the most fulsome response that we have seen and probably the toughest response that we've seen from anyone here in statewide office in Texas. But of course, it's just talking about a very specific item that the state is taking issue with there. Are you encouraged by that? Because, you know, obviously Texas, you know, oversees or manages other areas down there that could be sensitive, that could be affected by this. Or do you just see that as, you know, one little area that the state is, you know, taking issue with and that Big Bend National Park is still quite vulnerable here?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both of those things. I mean, we are extremely encouraged and very grateful to Commissioner Buckingham for having the guts to do that. She's a very conservative person. This was not something anyone expected. We had nothing to do with it. I would say a lot of other people probably did have more influence than we did. But Big Bend Ranch State Park, immediately upstream of the national park, and the Black Gap Wildlife Management Area, immediately downstream of the national park, those are certainly state lands, and how those go impacts Big Bend National Park and the visitors to Big Bend National Park, because really the public views them all as one big public recreation and conservation area. I was also really encouraged that Senator Cornyn has come out with a statement. So we're hoping that, you know, that dam is breaking with statewide elected Republicans. You know, as I said earlier, the only statewide elected Republican that I am aware of, or anyone in the Texas congressional delegation from the Republican side, the only one who's come out in favor is Ken Paxton. And yet most everyone else has simply been silent and avoided discussion on it.
You know,
Governor Abbott 10 years ago was very adamant when the wall issue came up in 2016 that he did not think a wall was appropriate in Big Bend National Park. You know, many of us have tried to approach the governor's office, say, can you make another statement? And he's hinted, he said, well, I think technology would be better. But then at other times he said, well, you know, that's a federal issue, which is kind of interesting coming from a governor who has gotten extremely involved in federal border policy when it's the other party in Washington. So, you know, right now it's mobilizing public opinion, encouraging elected officials of all parties, but especially of the president's party, that, you know, they need to speak out, because the only thing that will stop the destruction of Big Bend National Park, the state lands, and even the private lands, is if there's enough public pressure so that elected officials are willing to do what Commissioner Buckingham did and buck their party and speak the truth. And, you know, the midterms are coming up. It just seems to me that this could very well be something that impacts the balance of power in the state of Texas. And I would think the Republicans would notice that.
Do you think it's that big? Again, you see it all over social media and so forth. Do you think that this really could present a true vulnerability to a person running for office here in this state, or trying to retain office here in this state, who has nothing to say about this or looks the other way while this happens?
I think it's a real risk. You know, I'm not a political pundit, so I'm not making predictions there. But yeah, I do think it, you know, we have a tremendous amount of people in Austin and San Antonio and Dallas and Houston and other places. It's not just the sparsely populated West Texas where there are not a lot of voters. But I will say that in Texas 23, Tony Gonzalez's former district, both Republican and Democratic candidates have both come out very strongly against the wall. So, you know, you've got unity in that district, you know, and I, you know, Gina Hinojosa has come out against it. Tallarico's come out against it. I don't think this should be a partisan issue. And you know, keep Big Ben Wild and most of the others fighting this are working really closely with the local Republicans who are very eager to see this stopped. And we are happy to work with anyone from any party who's willing to engage to try to protect Texas's gift to the nation.
Yeah, you mentioned it's sparsely populated out there as far as voters go, but we also have to remember that a lot of your visitors are people escaping big cities like the one I'm standing in the middle of right now, who have really come to love Big Bend over the years. I want to just touch real quickly on what Senator Cornyn had to say about all of this. Of course, he is the outgoing U.S. Senator for Texas. He will be losing his seat no matter who wins in the Senate contest in November. But he sent a letter as well to the same people that you did. Mm-hmm. And he was basically saying, hey, we got a lot of county judges there along the border who are in the areas where this is impacting. And they're trying to engage with you all and get some answers. And to my knowledge, they've never received a response. So that sounds very much the same to what you all have been dealing with after you've been writing your letters.
Well, these are not things that are happening totally in vacuums from one another. So while we are not by any means taking credit or have any responsibility for Senator Cornyn's letter, we're gratified. And we certainly have been talking to his staff for months. So they have certainly heard things that we and others have said. But yes, you know, unfortunately, Senator Cruz is totally silent. Where is he? You know, and here's a man who has been very independent at times and willing to speak up for what he thinks is a position, whether or not it's popular in the White House. And so, you know, Senator Cruz's staff does not return my requests for meetings. And I hope that changes. You know, I do think he cares about Texas and his voice might really make a difference.
So at the end of the day here, how do you see this playing out? You know, we have a lot of public pressure that has built up about this, a lot of people angry about this. How do you think this shakes out in the end? Because this work is, at least the pre-work is already underway. And as far as I understand it, this could take, you know, a matter of weeks or, you know, a couple of months before this is really seriously underway there.
Well, I think your timeline is right. And they have unlimited money, but logistics are always a challenge in Big Bend, and that works to our favor right now. I'm not going to predict how this ends. You know, I am optimistic and hopeful, maybe not as much as I was a month or two ago, that we will be able to stop them from doing the most absurd and destructive things. But clearly they're there. And until they get direction to stop, the contractors have no incentive to act slowly or not spend as much money as they can. I do think this has the possibility, regardless of how it ends, to be one of those conservation battles and public interest battles that our grandchildren will be studying as case studies. You know, it could be that, you know, the world or at least the nation came out in defense of its public lands and stopped the worst from happening, which would be a great positive story, or it could be the worst desecration to the U.S. national park system, the envy of the world, since they built a dam in a pristine valley in Yosemite back in the early 1900s. You know,
yeah, I saw that.
I don't know which one of those it's going to be. I hope it's the first.
Yeah, I saw that reference from Yosemite in the letter that you all sent as well. My last thing for you here: what do you tell people if you know they've been out to Big Bend before? I've seen that, you know, quite a few people have chosen to have their weddings near there, mm-hmm. Who have proposed there in places like Santa Elena Canyon. I mean, it really has a special place in the hearts of a lot of people who, you know, might go there on a yearly basis or several times a year, or maybe they just went there once and it was magical and they care about this issue. What are you telling people right now if they care about this and they feel, you know, sort of helpless as we, you know, kind of wait to see what the plan is there and what actually happens there. I'm sure you've heard this from people. What do you tell them?
Well, it's kind of like the stages of grief. You know, you have to go through the refusal to believe it and the anger. But, you know, we're telling people, don't give up and your voice matters. The fact that they are not building the 30-foot wall is not likely because they made a good decision independent of what people were saying. So we are saying to people, breathe deep, don't accept it, but take responsibility for trying to fight this. And whether it's Keep Big Bend Wild or No Big Bend Wall or the National Parks Conservation Association or any number of other groups, get involved, see how you can help. We're really urging people to call the national office of their federal representatives in Texas or even out of Texas, and especially those who are in Republican districts. And we're all in Republican Senate districts in the state of Texas. Because if enough people say this is something you need to help stop and then give a few reasons, which they can find online or on our website, people will hear that. And maybe some of those folks who right now are afraid of repercussions from the White House, maybe they'll get afraid of losing their elections and decide that they want to speak up. So it's really tough. You know, we're not saying it's lost. We're saying it's at, you know, at risk. And we all have to band together to fight as hard as we can, because it's up to us to save the place that we care about so much.
Bob, thanks for the expertise on this issue. Again, you know, it's one of those things that's happening way out there in the corner of Texas. And, you know, a lot of people care very deeply about this. Others may have heard a rumbling or two about it and didn't really know what all is going on there and what all is at stake there. But thanks for filling us all in so that we can be up on this.
Jason, thanks for reaching out and asking. And anytime we can help you some more, don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.